Wow! I found the nub, but when I touched it, you knocked me off my feet. Luke felt wonder tingle through him. And it was completely unconscious on my part. I wasn't aware of doing anything. Luke touched his lips as new thoughts raced through his mind. I need to try this on other people. If it's completely a reflex reaction, this could be a very useful test for finding people who have latent Jedi powers. Next morning, the Metropolitan Shuttle skimmed over the rooftops of Imperial City like a bus on the thermals rising from chasms between the tall buildings. The strip of buildings newly erected by the construction droids looked like a gleaming stripe through the ancient city. Admiral Akbar piloted the shuttle himself, holding the controls in his articulated fin hands as he watched the skies with his widely set fish eyes. Behind him, strapped into their seats, rode Luke Skywalker and Leia Organa Solo. The bright dawn spread long shadows in the lower levels of the city. Akbar leaned forward to the comlink.
General Antilles, we are on approach. I can see the construction droid up ahead. Is everything cleared for our landing?
Yes, sir. Wedge's voice sounded clearly from the speaker. There's a good spot just to the right of the droid that should be perfect for landing. Akbar cocked his head to peer through the curved viewplate, then brought the Metropolitan Shuttle in, aligning it with gaps in the buildings, descending to the unexplored street levels. Wedge came out to meet them after Akbar had settled the shuttle beside the powered-down construction droid. Akbar emerged first into the rubble-strewn clearing, tilting his domed head up to look at the strip of sunlight coming from high above. Luke and Leia stepped out side by side as the vehicle hummed into its standby cool-down mode.
"Hi, Wedge," Luke called. "Or should I say, General Antilles?"
Wedge grinned.
"Wait until you see what the demolition crew found. I just might get promoted again."
"I'm not sure you'd want to," Leia said. "Then you'd be stuck with diplomatic duties." Wedge motioned for them to follow. The construction droid blocked out the sun. Luke could hear teams scrambling up access ladders and automated lifts on the outer shell of the droid. Maintenance crews were taking advantage of the shutdown time to check the internal factories and resource processors to modify some of the programming inside the droid's computer blueprint. The stripped carcass of a large beast lay in the rubble just outside the opening of the shielded room. Wedge gestured to it.
"That thing attacked us last night, and my team killed it. Sometime when we were up in the construction droid's pilot lounge, napping and cleaning up, other scavengers came out and stripped the meat off its bones. Too bad. The xenobiologist might have wanted to classify it, but now there's not much left."
Wedge ducked inside the breached metal walls of the shielded room. Luke could hear people shuffling and banging inside. He saw Leia wrinkle her nose at the strange smells wafting out. Luke's eyes took a moment to adjust to the glowing yellow illumination of the floating lights posted around the chamber. Something powerful had gone berserk in here. At first, he saw broken equipment scattered on the floor, wires torn out, smashed computer terminals. Long claw marks gashed the walls. A black spherical Imperial interrogation droid lay split open in one corner. He saw Leia's eyes fix on it, and he sensed a wave of revulsion pass through her. Several people from Wedge's team had wrestled a heavy metal grate back into place against one wall and were now laser welding it into its channel. The grate had been horribly bent.
"More excitement last night," Wedge said.
The welders looked up from their work, waved to Wedge, then bent back to their beams.
"The mate of that rat creature came back up through the tunnels, found its companion killed, and smashed everything it could."
He frowned.
"Ruined most of the old equipment here, but we still might be able to salvage something. The Emperor kept the place under tight security. Seems to be some kind of deep interrogation facility."
"Yes, indeed," Akbar said, striding through the wreckage.
Broken circuit boards crunched under his wide feet.
"We wouldn't want any of this to fall into the wrong hands."
Luke's attention drifted over to a tangle of wires and flat sheet crystal readers on the floor. His forehead furrowed with concentration as he went to look more closely.
"Is that what I think it is?" he mumbled.
"What did you say, Luke?" Leia asked, following him. He didn't answer her as he bent over the equipment, pulling wires and cables and trying to sort through the mess.
"It looks like there were three separate units here. They're probably all destroyed."
But he felt a growing excitement within him.
Maybe they would be able to piece the components together.
What is it?
Leia asked again. Luke uncoiled one of the cables and found an intact sheet crystal reader at the end. It looked like a glassy silver paddle longer than his hand.
I've read about this in my research on the old Jedi Knights. The Emperor's hunter teams used it to seek out Jedi who were hiding during his Great Purge.
He found a second intact sheet crystal paddle, then picked the control pack that looked the least damaged. With his cyborg hand, Luke brushed aside some of the dust, then jacked the cables into either side of the pack, holding the paddles one in each hand. He flipped the power switch on the control pack and was gratified to see a warm flurry of lights as the unit went through its initialization diagnostics.
The Emperor's teams used equipment like this as sort of a force detector for his henchmen to read the auras of people they suspected of having Jedi talent. According to the records, the remnants of the Jedi Knights held this thing in great fear. But maybe we can use it to restore the Jedi.
He grinned, and for a moment he felt like the fresh, excited farm boy he had been back on Tatooine.
Hold still, Leia. Let me test this on you.
She stood back, alarmed.
But what does it do?
Both Wedge and Ackbar had stepped over to watch.
Trust me, Luke said.
He held the sheet crystal paddles at arm's length, bracketing Leia. When he tripped the scan switch, a thin slice of coppery light traced down Leia's body from head to toe. Suspended in air above the control pack, a smaller echo of the copper scan line reappeared in reverse motion, assimilating the data and constructing a tiny hologram of Leia. It looked different from the small hollow of Leia that R2-D2 had projected for Ben Kenobi. Instead, it was a wireframe silhouette of her body, with color-coded lines tagged to readings that projected a column of numbers in the air. Surrounding the outline was a corona of flickering blue, faint but definite.
Can you understand anything from that, Luke? Admiral Ackbar said, peering closer.
Let's get another one for comparison.
This time Luke pointed the paddles at Wedge, who flinched as the coppery scan line ran up and down his uniform. When his wireframe hollow appeared beside Leia's, most of the color-coded details were similar, but his image showed no blue corona.
Now let's try you, Admiral.
He extended the paddles toward the Mon Calamarian, adjusting the control pack to take Ackbar's alien physiology into account. When his scan image appeared, it too lacked the blue aura.
Leia, would you do it to me, just so we can be more sure?
Leia handled the equipment reluctantly, as if uneasy to touch a device that had been used by those who had designed the interrogation droid. But she operated the scanner easily, holding the sheet crystal paddles on either side of Luke. His image bore the bright corona.
This is very valuable, Luke said. You don't need any particular skill with the Force to use this equipment. We can find people with Jedi potential just by scanning them. It will be a great help in finding candidates for my academy. Maybe some good will come of this device after all these years.
Very good, Luke, Ackbar said.
Luke pursed his lips.
Wedge, I want to try something. Would you relax for a minute and let me do a mind touch on you?
Wedge said, then saw his team members looking at him. He straightened.
Whatever you say, Luke.
Luke wasted no time reaching out to touch Wedge's temples, running a mental probe over the surface of his mind, back to the primitive area, the surprising nub in the contour of thoughts. But when Luke touched it, nothing happened. Wedge probably didn't even know he was being probed. Luke pushed harder, but he triggered no reflexive counteraction, no uncontrolled push as Leia had given him.
What was that all about? Wedge asked. Did you do anything?
Luke smiled.
I just strengthened a theory of mine. We have gotten a lot closer to bringing back the Jedi Knights.
4.
At least the ship didn't explode on impact. That was the first thing Han Solo thought as painful consciousness returned. He blinked his eyes, listened to the hissing of atmosphere streaming through breaches in the Millennium Falcon's hull. Somehow they had survived the crash landing. He wondered what planet he was on.
Kessel.
His eyes widened as he saw red splashes across the control panels. His own blood. His leg felt as if it were on fire, and he tasted liquid tin in his mouth. As he coughed, more blood splashed out. Han had not managed to strap himself in before the crash.
It was a good thing he had not stayed up in the gunwale. From his skewed vantage, he could see that the ship had spun on impact, with the top gunwale crushed beneath them. He hoped Chewbacca had fared better. Turning his head, Han felt as if shards of ground glass were rubbing his spine. In the co-pilot's chair, the Wookiee lay motionless, his pelt matted with discolored blood oozing from wounds hidden by his shaggy fur.
"Chewie," he managed to croak. "Say something, okay?"
Han heard the thud of a small explosive charge on the primary hatch, then someone from outside managed to hotwire the ramp. The rest of the Falcon's air spurted into Kessel's thin atmosphere.
"Great," he mumbled.
With the shattering pain in his ribs, it had already been hard enough to breathe. Heavy footsteps marched up the ramp. Han wanted to pull out his blaster, or at least knock a few enemies down in a fistfight. But he could barely raise his eyes, expecting to see an orderly column of white-armored stormtroopers. That would be an appropriate end to a day like this. Instead, the intruders wore a hodgepodge of armor, some parts modified from prison guard uniforms, other plates adapted from stormtrooper equipment. None of it made any sense to Han, but his mind had already maxed out with things that should never have happened. A TIE fighter and an X-wing fighting side by side? Against him? The boarding party wore oxygen masks fitted over their faces to let them breathe the thin atmosphere of Kessel. Their voices were muffled as they shouted orders to each other. One man, looking scarecrowish with impossibly long arms and neck, strode into the Falcon's cockpit. Han felt recognition stir inside him, but he couldn't pinpoint a name. The scarecrow wore armbands from an Imperial prison, but at his side he carried a modified double blaster that was patently illegal on most planets. The scarecrow turned wide-set, flinty eyes on Han.
"Han Solo," he said.
Though the breath mask covered his lower face, Han could tell the man was grinning widely.
"You're going to wish you never survived landing on Kessel."
With a flash of memory, the scarecrow's name came to Han. Skinksnacks. That was it. But Skinksnacks had been locked up in the Imperial Correction Facility, barely avoiding a death sentence. Questions had just begun forming in his mouth when Skinksnacks brought an armored fist down on Han's head, sending him back into unconsciousness.
Kessel. Spice.
His thoughts mixed into nightmares as he fought to come back to himself. Han had always been proud to boast that the Falcon had made the Kessel run in record time, but he rarely recounted the whole tale, that he had actually been fleeing Kessel with a full load of spice in his secret below-decks compartments when Imperial tariff ships had tagged him. Han got the shipment, as always, from Maruth Duel, the frog-like man in charge of skimming black market spice from Imperial production quotas. Duel was some sort of official in the gigantic Imperial prison complex, from which came most of the spice mine laborers. The Empire maintained strict control over the spice output, but Duel managed to keep quite a little side market of his own. Han Solo and Chewbacca had run spice for him, whisking it past Imperial patrols and putting it into distribution channels run by gangsters such as Jabba the Hutt. But Maruth Duel had a habit of stringing along his helpers until he decided he could gain bigger favor by turning them over to the authorities. Han had never been able to prove it, but he suspected that Duel himself had tipped off the tariff ships on the Falcon's flight away from Kessel, providing the exact coordinates where Han planned to enter hyperspace. Han had been forced to jettison his entire cargo of glitter stem spice, worth a fortune, just before being boarded. When Han tried to circle back later and retrieve the floating cargo, the Imperials had given pursuit. During the chase, he had desperately skimmed closer to the gravity influence of the immense black hole cluster than the nav charts claimed was possible. One of the tariff ships had been lost in the swirling maelstrom of hot gases, plunging into a bottomless singularity. But the Falcon had survived, breaking into hyperspace and fleeing to safety. Temporary safety. The lost cargo of spice alone had been worth 12,400 credits, and Jabba the Hutt had already paid for it in full. Jabba had not been pleased. The thought of all those months frozen in carbonite, motionless, hanging on Jabba's wall made him shiver. The cold was black around him, and he couldn't see. His teeth chattered together.
"Cease your thermal convulsions.
A raspy metallic voice snapped. It sounded like a plasma saw cutting through rock.
The temperature in the medical center has been lowered to minimize surgical shock to your metabolism.
Opening his eyes, Han stared up into the bullet-like face of a medical droid. Most of the metal was primary green, but a black hooded attachment extended over its optical sensors. Segmented mechanical arms reached toward him, displaying a wide variety of out-of-date medical implements, all of them sharp.
I am the prison medical droid. I have not been programmed for anesthetics or the niceties of making you comfortable. If you fail to cooperate, your treatment will only be more unpleasant.
Han rolled his eyes back. This was a far cry from traditional medical droids, who were programmed specifically with the patient's comfort in mind. End of side one. To continue, turn the cassette over.